Good morning. I'm Bo Henricks here on The Morning Show. On Thursday, April 4th, I, along with teachers, parents, and other family members, along with members of Delta Kappa Gamma's Lambda chapter, gathered in Pippin 1 room at the Richland Hospital as we listened to stories written by students from local schools, all part of the literary competition program sponsored by the Wisconsin State Organization. Lambda this year continued its long-standing tradition of sponsoring events for Richland County students. 103 students presented stories. Six schools participated in the program: Richland Center Intermediate and Richland Center Middle Schools, St. Mary of the Assumption School, Eagle School, Weston, and Ithaca Schools. When it came to the contest, there were guidelines that had two formats. Traditionally, all students wrote a story, and with hand drawings located throughout the works, illustrated key elements of the story. There were different word limits established for each grade level. In recent years, the Wisconsin State Organization added an option to illustrate the story using photographs taken by the author or a family member. Quite recently, the internet was added as a potential source, with, as is common in literature, requiring each source to be documented at the point it is inserted. It is my privilege to be able to share with you this morning on The Morning Show the winning stories that the students for each grade level read at the event. We'll start off with Caleb Waterfall, who began the evening. He is a third grader at Richland Center Intermediate School. His teacher is Jessica Parr, and he read his story, Bob the Carrot. It was a great start to the evening. Here's Caleb Waterfall.
This is my story, Bob the Carrot. Bob woke up with a start. What? Oh, counting he called. Bob had slept in again. This had happened for the last 4 days. He almost always woke up really late. He sat down the stairs in a hurry. He didn't want to be late to work again. He quickly ate his cereal and shut out the door. Bob got on a skateboard and took off onto the street. He skated down the sidewalk and saw Fred. He's a piece of broccoli. What's up, Fred? It's going good here. You? I'm doing good, too. Well, I have to get going, so bye, Bob said. Then he sped away. Hopefully today will be a good day, thought Bob. Soon Bob got to work. Sweet work, he said as he skated up to Garnish and Serve restaurant. He worked his 7-hour shift and then went home. He met three people on his way home. First, he met Daniel, the pepper. Second, he met Lily, the cucumber. And third, he met Aubrey. She's a leaf of lettuce. Finally, he got home. I'm home, honey, he called to his wife. He made himself and his wife a delicious Alfredo. Then he read a little and went to bed. He woke up early the next day. He got ready for work, and this time walked to work. He got there early that day and helped until they opened. While he helped, he talked to his friends and learned that there was going to be a parade that day. They would have an hour off of work because of the parade. His friends included a piece of asparagus, a piece of broccoli, Fred, and a zucchini. But when the time of the parade came, they each split up to go watch it. Bob thought it was fun. He was delighted every time they came by his house. Eventually, though, he had to go back to work. At the end of a 7-hour shift, he walked home and saw one of the people he had met earlier. He was just walking around the corner and he saw Lily. She had just walked around the other corner. They talked to him and Bob learned that Lily was moving. Oh no, he thought, I just met her. Finally, he got home and took a long nap. He woke up just in time for dinner. After a mouth-watering dinner, he read and went to bed. The end.
Again, that was Caleb Waterfall, a third grader from Richland Center Intermediate School. Up next, we move to fourth grade, and the winner was Alexandra Bakken, and her story was A Homeless Penguin. Her teacher is Stephanie Joyce, as Alexandra goes to Richland Center Intermediate School as well. Here's Alexandra Bakken with A Homeless Penguin.
One day, a girl named Allison was walking home from school. Then she heard a noise. It sounded like chirping. Allison looked over and saw a baby penguin. Allison ran over to the baby penguin. She picked him up and then looked in his awful eyes. Allison decided to take him home to feed him, also to give him a home. When she got home, she went to the fridge. Uh-oh, said Allison. We don't have any fish. I know what to do, said Allison. Dad, can we have fish for dinner, said Allison. I thought you didn't like fish, said Allison's dad. Well, I was thinking I could try, said Allison. Okay, said Allison's dad. Come here, said Allison. Wait, I need to give you a name, said Allison. How about Max, because I love you to the max. The penguin named Max nodded. "Yes," he said. "You can talk," exclaimed Allison. "Of course I can," said Max. "It's your love for me that makes me be able to talk." Max and Allison, it's time for bed." "Okay," said Max. They walked and waddled upstairs to Allison's bedroom. Allison picked him up and said, "Good night, Max," as she tapped him in. The next morning, Allison had to go to school. Allison said to Max, "Bye, Max. I'll see you tonight." "No," Max said, as he ran as fast as he could to catch up with her. Max finally caught up with her. "Take me with you," cried Max. "Okay, I will," said Allison as she picked him up. Then they were best friends forever. That was the story of the homeless penguin, the end.
Again, that was Alexandra Bakken, a fourth grader. When it came to fourth grade, there was actually a tie. And it also went to another fourth grader who also had Stephanie Joyce as a teacher at the Richland Center Intermediate School. His name is Dylan Putz. And his story was Fishing Fanatics.
Fishing Fanatics. "My name is Red, and I love to fish. Actually, the part I love most is catching fish. One of the greatest fishing trips in my life took place in the summer of 2022. I was lucky enough to go on a Canadian fishing trip with George and Herman to Musker Lake in Saskatchewan. George is the whole reason for my love of fishing and why I got to go to Canada. You see, George is my uncle and Herman is my grandpa. Uncle George taught me how to fish and is very patient with me. He even has his own boat and lots of fishing rods and lures. Herman showed me a few fishing tricks, but mostly how to sleep. I have never been to such an isolated area. We drove all the way from Wisconsin to Saskatchewan, where we took a seaplane to Monster Lake. We stayed in a cabin on an island in the middle of the lake. The cabin didn't have running water, so we kind of stunk by the end of the week. We had some power thanks to solar panels on the cabin roof and a generator. We packed a lot of food, plenty of bait and lures, and three fishing rods for each of us. We were tired from our travels, but I was so excited to be there. I begged Uncle George to take me out fishing as soon as we got settled into the cabin. Grandpa stayed back and napped while we headed out in a super cool boat that was part of our rental package. The boat was made of wood that was carefully polished. I've only seen a boat like that on YouTube, never in real life. Uncle George started the engine with ease, and we set course for a secluded bay in hopes of finding a trophy muskie. We tried our biggest lures and caught nothing but weeds. We switched to smaller lures and started catching walleyes. We kept five big ones and headed back to the cabin. Grandpa was finally awake and he cleaned the fish while I gathered wood for a campfire. Uncle George gave me hints on how to build fire. After supper, I roasted marshmallows for all of us. We went to bed early that night since we were exhausted. After a good night's sleep, we all got up early and boated to a new fishing spot. We saw eagles, pelicans, loons, and lots of jumping fish, so we knew the fish were going to be active. We caught lots of fish, but no muskies or pike. It was a sunny day, and Grandpa and I were both starting to get sleepy. Uncle George kept fishing while we napped. I woke up and decided to fish again. I caught the biggest fish of the day, a pike. Uncle George couldn't believe that he was being outfished by an 8-year-old kid. The next 4 days were filled with swimming, fishing, rock collecting, and of course, napping. The time to pack up and head for home came. Much to my disappointment, we piled our gear on the dock and waited for the seaplane. I started to fish off the dock with my favorite pole. I caught a 56-inch muskie just before the seaplane landed. What a monster. Probably why Monster Lake got the name. I didn't get a picture, but I'll never forget it. I'm so happy that I got to go on this fishing adventure. The end.
The next student to present during the evening was Presley Baronic in grade 5. Presley's teacher is Shelley Schrader, and she goes to Richland Center Intermediate School. When it came to her story, The title was Walter's Scary Yet Exciting Day. Hope you enjoy it here on The Morning Show.
Walter's Scary Yet Exciting Day. Hello, my name is Walter, and I'm a sea turtle. I live in the Pacific Ocean in Hawaii. I'm 10 years old, and in sea turtle life, that's almost an adult. Anyways, I better get back to jumping waves. Walter, Mom called down in the coral reef. I was jumping waves, so I was at land level. I thought my mom was joking when she said I had to go to the deep, dark sea. I guess she needed some sea urchins to eat. So there I went. I've only ever seen other turtles and fish, so I was a little nervous. What is that, I asked myself. Mom had talked about scuba divers and boats, but this? What was this? I had to get out of here, I thought. Wait, I think these are crabs. There were crabs all along. I wondered why there were so many. Even though I wanted to observe the crabs, I had to get sea urchins. I was almost there until something came up to me. This was huge. I couldn't even think, I was so nervous. It swam closer. What is this? Repeated in my head. I knew what it was. Suddenly, the fear left and I realized it was a scuba diver. Mom said they won't hurt me, so I felt fine. I kept on swimming. The rest of the swim was a little bumpy, but there were no more unexpected creatures. I was finally in the deep, dark sea. I went down to some coral and looked around. I had never seen a sea urchin before, but after everything, I knew I would know. Then I saw them. Sea urchins. I knew they were these little black, spiky rock-type things. I picked up six and started home. On the way home, I saw something. Was this a shark? Mom said they were gray and white. It was a shark. Oh, no. Uh-oh. At this point, I need to swim fast, I said out loud. At this point, it was chasing me. I went by the crabs and the scuba diver. Finally, I made it home. I went inside quickly and called out Mom. After a long seven-hour day, we got to eat the sea urchins. This might be my favorite food, I thought. It was the best day ever. Aside from the shark and other scary things, it was the best day of my life. The end.
That was Presley Baronic in grade 5. But also in grade 5, there was Chase Cook during the evening who read his story. Chase was awarded the Lambda Illustrator Awards winner. One of two. And Chase, his story was Fun Times for Trucks and Cars. When it came to Jace's teacher, it was Shelley Schrader. And he also goes to the Richland Center Intermediate School. Here he is, Chase Cook, Fun Times for Trucks and Cars.
My teacher drives this truck. Look at the Baja lights. You may see this car using the racetrack. Someday I'll have this truck to go off-roading with my dad. My grandpa uses this truck to go into town. If you prefer derby cars, this is the one for you. I like movies with crazy action scenes. This car is up for the job. This dually hauls big loads of Holsteins.
Again, that was Chase Cook. It was time to move on, though, after that to grade 6 during the evening, as we heard from the other Lambda Illustrator Awards winner, Stella Woodhouse. Stella's teacher is Jill Polanka, and Stella's story was called Baja Baby, Baby's Visits.
Baja Baby, Baby's Visitors by Stella Woodhouse. One day, in the Baja Baby spaceship, Poppy woke up in her room. She lives on a spaceship deep in outer space. Beep, beep. Looks like someone wants Poppy to go to the control center. What is it? Poppy asked. Well, Mama said, we will be getting visitors from that planet, she said, pointing out the windows. I should dress up for them, Poppy thought. A dress? A skirt? Maybe a necklace? Or my dino suit? Poppy ran through the halls of the Baja Baby spaceship towards her room. She dug through her costume box and picked out a necklace, a crown, and her green dino suit. Beep, beep. They're here! Poppy raced through the halls and skidded into the Teleporter 500 room. Just as she entered, they were beamed in. She gazed at their short, fuzzy bodies. Welcome, Mama said, to the Baja Baby spaceship, and say hello to the Baja Baby herself. Hello, Baja Baby. Hello, Baja Baby. Hello, Baja Baby, they each said in turn. Hello, Poppy said shyly. My name is Poppy, actually. Ooh, said the pink one. Look, she has ears like mine. My name is Winnie. So cool, Poppy agreed. Now let's get to our business, Mama said. You kids go play. The tallest green one and the shortest blue one stepped forward and went out with Mama. Winnie and Poppy grinned at each other and raced through out of the teleporter 500 room and ran through the halls. They played for the rest of the day and had loads of fun.
Again, Stella Woodhouse with her story, Baja Baby. As we moved ahead to grade 7 for the winner in the literary competition, it was Ben Waterfall. His teacher is Daniela Storkson, who is the teacher at the Richland Center Middle School. His story was The Last Epoch, Wardens of Andromneal. For the reading, though, for Ben's work, he had a special presenter, his dad. So here is Ben Waterfall's dad reading his story, The Last Epoch, Wardens of Andromneal.
I'm Ben's dad. The Last Epoch, Wardens of Andromneal, by Ben Waterfall. Astoria grimaced. She had a rock in her shoe, and it was rubbing against her foot. She was walking home from school, which hadn't been exactly wonderful, to say the least. Most people didn't understand why she looked the way she did. Then again, most people had never met an elf before. And most people that met her weren't the most understanding either. Also, it didn't help that she had an uncanny knack for predicting things before they happened, and that she had near-perfect memory and was nothing short of genius. At least the gnomes understood her. Astoria spent most afternoons lounging in the sun with the gnomes, talking about various technological treatises and making theories about different planes of existence. But right now, she had to go home and grab her telescope of stargazing. She walked through the fringes of her town, Corliss, a farming village on the edge of the burning sea, which was named after the way it looks during sunrise. Her adoptive parents were cartographers and were busy working in their shop. Astoria reached her house and fumbled with the lock for a couple moments before opening the door. She hopped up the stairs of the house to her room. When she reached the room, she paused. The door was slightly ajar, and it definitely had not been like that when she had left that morning. Astoria carefully peeked around the corner and saw a small present in a gold box with a red bow tied around it. She hesitantly walked into her room and opened the present. Inside was a note with the following message. My dearest Astoria, I have gifted you an item very important to me. Keep it safe and use it well. Go to the library and you will find your future. Good luck. Astoria dug deeper into the package and found a large book, much too large to reasonably fit into the box. The book was entitled The Dryad Aeolus, or as Astoria somehow knew, The Book of Magic Knowledge. Curiously, she put it into the box and headed to the library. When she got to the library, it was closed as the night was setting in. Astoria carefully opened a side window and snuck into the building. At first glance, there was nothing out of place, just old, dusty books. Then Astoria noticed a large tome that was slightly out of place. She looked closer and saw that it was written in a different language, one so alien that she had no idea where it could be from. Astoria pulled it out of the bookcase and almost immediately dropped it on the floor because of how heavy it was. She carefully opened the book and found a necklet, a neckband, and laced with arum, an extremely rare silver medal with an ice-colored gemstone set in the front, carved with runes. Astoria stared at the neckband for a bit before deciding to put it on. After all, she thought, what could go wrong? As soon as Astoria put on the necklace, a strong gust of wind blew through the library and an extremely tall, four-armed person appeared in front of her. Who dares summon us? Growled the figure, looking around with his eyeless face. It stopped when it saw Astoria, who shrunk back against the wall. Oh, said the creature, I didn't see you there. Sorry about the dramatics. It's just for show. Astoria swallowed. Okay. Speak up, little girl, said the creature. We can't hear you. Said Astoria, we? Yes, we, said the creature patiently. We are one person with many consciences. However, I, Karkatekin, am a controlling consciousness. Karkatekin? Asked Astoria. Well, said Karkatekin, no need to be so formal. Just call me Atek. Okay, said Astoria, Atek. Anyway, said Atek, anyone who puts on that neckband, he gestured towards Astoria's neck, summons me. Okay, said Astoria. Anything else? Well, yes, said Atek, one of his arms rubbing his neck. Anyone who summons me must agree to a mutual agreement. What kind of mutual agreement? Asked Astoria suspiciously. Well, you see, said Atek, fidgeting, an agreement of power. I give you power in exchange for servitude. Well, that seems dumb, said Astoria. Who wants to do that? Well, whoever wears the necklace, said a tech gesturing towards Astoria's neck again, can't take it off till they agree. Easy, said Astoria, I'll just take it off then. Well, said a tech, you can't take it off once you put it on. Oh, said Astoria, in that case, what are the terms of the agreement? Here we go, said a tech. One, I will give you magical power as long as you, two, do what I say. Don't worry, I won't have you do that much. I'll just need you to do some errands for me once in a while. Astoria sized up her options. After a while of thinking, she had come to her decision. Okay, she said, that's a deal. The next day was a Saturday, so Astoria went to visit the gnomes. When she got to the gnome encampment, she was surprised to see one of the gnomes, Rust Bucket, waiting for her. Fine Father Grimm wants to see you, Rust Bucket told her. It is very important. Confused and more than a little nervous, Astoria followed Rust Bucket to the Clan Father's tent. Inside was dark, and she could barely make out the form of Clan Father Grimm. Forgive me for the darkness, he said, snapping his fingers. Light flooded the tent, beaming from two small lanterns. You wanted me? Asked Astoria. Yes, indeed I did, and still do, said Grimm, stroking his long beard. What for? Asked Astoria. Not many things escape my notice, said Grimm, and your recent pact with Karkatekin isn't one of them. You are not safe here, Grimm continued. I am sending Rustbucket with you, and you will go find Adhavar, the hidden academy of magic.
Well, there was the reading of Ben Waterfall's The Last Epoch, Wardens of Andromniel, and of course a team effort read by his dad. In grade 8, the winner was Emily Thomas from Eagle School. Emily's teacher is Christine Brenninger, and when it came to Emily's story, the title was Trail of Glitter.
I was on my way home from school with my friend on one of the coldest evenings of the season. It was already fall and it hadn't snowed, but the tips of our noses and our fingertips felt like we were stuck in a freezer, eating ice cream while watching Frozen. Margaret, my friend, asked diffidently, yeah, what's up? Did you ask your mom about coming over tonight? No. Margaret, she paused on the sidewalk, I'm sorry, I just haven't found the right moment to ask. My mom's been so busy with work recently. I didn't want to stress her out, but I promise I'll ask her when I get home. Pinky promise, pinky promise. Once I got home, I sat by the fire and did my homework, with my dog Louie next to me. While petting him, I noticed shimmering glitter on his golden fur, which struck an idea. Maybe I can make Mom a card for when she gets home, then she'll definitely let me go to the sleepover. I scurry up to my room with Louie short behind me. I grab the glitter that my grandma bought for my birthday, which she knows I love. I take out the pink, purple, and green glitter containers and pour them into a big bowl. With the dish in my hand, I go to grab the glue. When I accidentally trip over Louie, I panicked until I caught myself before the glitter fell out of the bowl. If I had made a mess, my mom would have grounded me for my entire life. I was so relieved, I didn't even notice the door. Without looking in front of me, I walked straight into the bedroom door, knocking the bowl out of my hands and the glitter straight into the carpeted flooring. My heart sank deeper than the Mariana Trench. I couldn't believe it. I made one of the biggest messes of my life, and I'm not even in middle school yet. While staring at the glistening tragedy, I heard the front door creak open. It was my mom. Hey, I'm home, Margaret. I had no words. I knew this was the end of me. Then I saw Louie get up and go see her, which revealed the hiding place. Why is this dog trying to ruin my life? Aren't you supposed to be man's best friend? I heard my mother's footsteps like banging drums in my heart up the stairs. I knew exactly what was about to happen. Hey, Mar. It had been 40 minutes of my mother lecturing me about how careless and inconsiderate I am. I wish I could just tell her what happened. Maybe she wouldn't be so mad. Margaret, you need to start paying more attention to things. I clean this house every day just to come home with it as a mess again. But Mom, I didn't really mean to. I was trying. Margaret, I don't want any excuses. I just want the truth. Until you can give me that, you're grounded to your room for the rest of the night. I could tell my mom was disappointed, even though she sounded calm. There was no use in trying to argue. Once I went upstairs, I cleaned up the mess and sat on my bed. I was so mad at my mom. I wish I would have been at the sleepover by now if it wasn't for her. Then an idea sparked. I'm going to go to that sleepover. It was almost 7, and I was getting ready to sneak out. I had my bag packed, my bed looked like I was sleeping in it, using one of my old dress-up wigs and some pillows. I was ready to go. I opened the window, and thankfully there was a tree right outside of it. I climbed down it and started my adventure. The only problem was I don't know exactly where her house was. I've only been there a few times, and my mom drove me. And that's when my mom drove me. It had already been half an hour, and I still had no idea where I was going. I remember one time my mother was dropping me off at my friend's house when she was running late for work, so she took a shortcut through the woods. It was getting cold out, so I took the shortcut, even though I'm not sure what path it was. As I walked, I noticed it was colder than I realized. I was getting so cold, I felt too tired to walk. I knew I should keep going, but I just couldn't. I found a nearby tree and sat next to it. Maybe I should rest my eyes for a little bit. 5 minutes couldn't hurt. As I was shivering, I couldn't feel a thing. Misty clouds came from my breath, and my eyes felt heavier and heavier until I closed them. I soon realized what was happening, and I called out, "Mom." I tried and tried, but I couldn't get louder than a whisper. After a while, it just hurt, until I heard what to me felt like a miracle. "Margaret, Mom." I tried to get up, but my legs felt numb, and my heart was racing rapidly. Then I felt nothing. I woke up to a rhythmic beeping next to me and a warm hand in mine. Once I gained consciousness, I realized I was in a hospital bed with my mother next to me. She hugged me at once. I remembered everything. Mom, I asked wearily. "Yes, Margaret." "I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have run away. I shouldn't have made that mess. I shouldn't have gotten mad. It's okay. You're safe now. That's all I care about. How'd you find me?" "A trail of glitter."
Again, that was Emily Thomas with Trail of Glitter. Finally, in the evening, it was time to hear from Grade 9's winner, who was Lucian Hamblin, also a student at Eagle School and a student of Christine Brenninger. It was time to hear from Lucian's story, which was War of Seven Nations, The Inaccessible Forest.
We left off our three adventurers, Henry, William, and Jack, who claimed the Dragonborn's Axe of Ebony, an axe that can absorb evil, from the palace of the Kingdom of Man. The trio now set out to find the Dragonborn's next weapon. They knew they must leave the land of Nord and cross the inaccessible forest into the Giant's territory to look for the next weapon at the Giant's Mountain. The continent divided into seven nations. The three adventurers left Man's Nation of Nord, a large city surrounded by an inaccessible forest. Man had gone to great lengths to cast spells and around the forest. They headed to the Land of Giants, which was a nation of lush forests surrounded around a freezing mountain that stood at the center of their nation. They reached the border between the Nord and the inaccessible forest. "What makes it inaccessible?" Jack asks. "The forest will block the sky and it will grow dark. Stranger things will happen the longer you stay in the forest. You'll start to hear voices and see things that are not there. At least, you hope aren't there," Jack William said. William's family had collected many books, and William loved to read about the nations. The books were gone, but the stories remained to comfort William. Groups of people ended up losing half their members or more by the time they come out of the forest, William added. "Those are only stories, right?" asked Jack. "Why are you too afraid?" William asked. "No," Jack snapped. "What if we made a camp outside the forest?" "It's starting to get dark," Jack said. "If we stay here, the guards will find us and we won't be able to stop this war," Henry said. William reminded them, "We started this journey after the Gorgonians killed our families and burned our homes. We stole the Axe of Ebony from our leader because he would not help us. Remember, the whole point of this is that 500 years ago, a hero named the Dragonborn had used his power to unite the nations. According to the books I found in the remains of my house, the Dragonborn hid himself away to wait when he would be needed again, so we need to continue our quest and not get caught by the guards." "We need to try finding him," Henry said. William continued, "The Dragonborn's whereabouts could be found from clues on the Dragonborn's seven weapons, but we only have the first weapon." They slowly walked into the forest. They walked for a few hours until they set up camp. As they cleared brush for their camp, they heard a scream. They looked around and did not see anything in any direction. They continued to watch as they built camp. They really had no choice but to continue, and as they finished, they heard a clang of metal, then nothing. They sat and strained to listen until it was time to get out their bedrolls. Henry dreamed of going through the woods, but as they did, shadows followed behind them. He woke up shaking and sweating. They packed up the next morning and wearily continued. As they went, it got darker. "Was it not sunrise just a bit ago?" asked Jack. As they kept going, a low rolling fog moved in. They continued on like they could not hear the distant sounds of mournful moaning. It continued, but the roaring did not stop and just got louder and louder. Then the sounds of small chimes started to, but it kept getting louder and louder until it was as loud as a church bell tolling. They fell to their knees and covered their ears as best they could to the deafening sound. They stopped, but their ears continued to ring. Abruptly, a glow appeared in front of them. And he asked what appeared to be a specter. "Who are you?" And the specter responded, "You should be asking me who I was." "Who were you then?" quipped William. "My name is Uthar, and I was a warrior from Nord. The lands were young and the settlements small. We divided the continent into seven nations. The lands were prosperous and flourished. However, some of the nations grew hungry for power. I was stationed as a guard on the border to protect the Nord from invasion. The Gargonians, a nation of aggressive lizard people to the south, were the first to attack. A royal mage from our land of Nord cast a wicked spell that trapped our souls in the accessible forest to protect the borders. Some spirits turned dark when they could not return to their loved ones," Uthar then paused. "So why are you here?" Uthar asked for a moment. "We want to cross the forest to find a great hero, the Dragonborn, to put a stop to this war," Henry said. "I don't know why, but I believe you," the specter said. "I will help you find your way." As they made through the forest, they felt a presence all around them, following them, and the forest started to get brighter and more shadows danced around them. As they cleared the trees and the shadows, the members of the party sighed with relief. "We have made it to the edge. I wish you the best on your journey," said Uthar. "It's been a pleasure," replied Henry. They headed away from the forest quickly, but Henry hit an invisible barrier and was thrown backwards. Once he recovered, he heard a whisper come from behind him. "No one leaves without a sacrifice." They looked to see a shadowy figure. A black robe flew off of him, and his eyes glowed red. "Someone must become one of my soldiers for the others to go free," said the dark specter. "I would rather fight than give up my life willingly," said Henry. "I second that," said William. "Same here," said Jack. Henry looked at his friends and that came up beside him, and giving him a sense of strength. "Then you all shall perish," said the specter. With that, the dark specter launched an attack at Henry. Henry dodged, and the spell hit the tree behind him. The tree's green leaves turned to brown and began to rot. Jack tried to hit the dark specter, ignorant that the specter cannot be hurt with physical attacks. The dark specter sent Jack flying backwards with a fierce blow. Once he landed, he lacked the strength or will to get up. The dark specter waved his hands and prepared a spell to finish him off. Then Uther stopped the dark specter by grabbing him from behind. "Use the axe," Jack yelled at William. William did not move. Henry ran for it and grabbed the axe from William and ran towards the two specters. "You might have been a great wizard, but all that magic is useless at close quarters combat," Uthar shouted. "You think I was a great wizard? I am nothing. The great mage is stronger than me," responded the dark specter. Just as he finished speaking, Henry hit the dark specter with the axe. The specter flowed into the axe. The patterns on the axe turned red to blue, showing the transfer from evil to pure power that can be used in the future. "Thank you. I have been trying for hundreds of years to be rid of him," Uthar said. "Are you not free to go to the beyond now?" asked Henry. "We are not. This curse does not leave after the caster is gone. The one known as the great hero can break the curse. Until he returns, we are to wander the woods for eternity. However, with the corrupted wizard gone now, no others will be forced to join his eternal army again," said Uthar. Uthar disappeared from in front of them. Suddenly, Jack grabbed William by his collar and demanded, "What happened back there? You stood there and did nothing." "If Uthar had not intervened, we would have died. I froze," responded William, and he dropped his head in shame. "Make sure it doesn't happen again," said Jack. "Are you two done? Because we have a war stop," Henry stated. They shook their heads in agreement. "Good, let's get going," Henry said. They walked to the border and reached out to see if they could go through. Nothing happened. As they continued through the land of the giants, the sky got brighter. The trees went from small pines to huge oak trees and blocked most of the view of the giant's mountain. People speculate why everything in the giant's land is so big. Some stories tell of giants dying in the forest and their bodies decomposing, making the forest grow. Other stories say that that massive mountain at the center of the nation was from the corpse of one massive giant, the largest that had ever lived, William explained. Hopefully those dead giants don't mind us walking on them, Jack said jokingly. At sunset, they finally reached the mountain's base at the center of the land of giants. Oddly, they had not seen a single giant on this journey. They looked up to see how high it was. It reached beyond the clouds. How are we going to climb that? Jack screamed at the mountain in frustration. One step at a time, said Henry. The end.
Again, that was Lucian Hamblin of Eagle School with his story, War of Seven Nations, The Inaccessible Forest. Really capping off the evening of just so much talent here in Southwest Wisconsin. Our congratulations go out to all of the students who came away with awards, but also to all 103 students who took part presenting their stories in this literary competition. Now, in addition to the schools that we mentioned earlier, second and third place winners were from St. Mary of the Assumption, and a second place winner was from Weston. Congratulations once more, and a big thank you to the teachers, parents, other family members, and of course, the members of Delta Kappa Gamma's Lambda chapter for holding this literary competition and hosting the evening in the Pippin One Room of the Richland Hospital.